Welcome to this meeting of the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs. This week's topic is development disasters. What should Canada's role be? It doesn't take long, if you're watching the news, to realize that Canada is involved around the world in a number of different ways, and it's up to Canadians to be thoughtful about this and to know what Canada's role is. And we're very fortunate today to have as our speaker Ruth Shapiro. Ruth is the Executive Director of the Canadian International Development Agency Prairie Regional Office, and Ruth is very actually familiar to those of us here in Alberta. Just on a personal note, I've known Ruth since about 1976. Our careers have kind of followed each other around the province and to different places. Ruth was actually the Public Participation Program Officer responsible for the World Citizen Centre, which used to be here in Lethbridge. She has been to Tanzania with Canadian International Development Agency. She was working at the University of Calgary for a while in the international office, and then was asked to take over as executive director of the new Prairie Regional Office when that was set up a few years ago. So Ruth, who is the director of the CETA Prairies Regional Office, has been with CETA since 1983, and as I say, previously serving as director of the Public Participation Program, the Anglophone Non-Governmental Organization Program, and as Counselor Development in Tanzania. Ruth is going to speak to us about the role of CETA, and as I said, when we started out, about development, disasters, and what Canada's role should be. So I welcome all of you, including the TV audience that are watching this, to this meeting of Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs, and particularly Ruth Shapiro.
Good afternoon. I'm delighted to be here. I've been looking for an opportunity, actually, to come to Lethbridge for the longest time. I used to come here many, many years ago for fun. Boyfriend in Lethbridge. So it's really very nice to be back, although the city has totally changed. I'm here today. I was very pleased to get this invitation, and it's unfortunately timely because of what's happening now in South Asia and Pakistan, to really talk about what Canada's role is in development assistance, what we're doing and what we should be doing or what we can do. I'm going to try to break this up a little bit. First of all, talking to you just a bit about Canada, CETA, the Canadian International Development Agency, which of course is a Canadian government department responsible for the delivery of about 80% of Canada's development assistance. And then we're going to talk a little bit about sort of a case study, Pakistan, what kinds of things are we actually doing today to try to address, you know, the crisis that's going on as we speak. So when we talk about international development, I mean, basically, the term is interchangeable. We can talk about international development assistance, we can talk about foreign aid, we can talk about development cooperation. All of those terms basically refer to the same thing, and we hope that what they really mean is that it's another term for how do people help people? How can we help people to help themselves? So CETA, what is CETA? Well, as you know, it's the Canadian International Development Agency. You may have heard of our minister, Eileen Carroll. She's been very prominent on the news and everything, especially in the latest announceables about Pakistan and, to a lesser degree, India and Afghanistan. So that's, we're part of the, we are a separate ministry, and as I said, we are responsible for delivering approximately $3.5 billion worth of Canadian aid to several different countries, and we'll talk a little bit about that. What is our mandate? I mean, basically, our mandate is fairly simple. There's some key words in it. It's to support sustainable development, and a key word is sustainable, in developing countries. So that means our work is only in Africa, Asia, the Americas, and one or two countries in Central and Eastern Europe. And our goal is to contribute to a more secure and a more equitable and a more prosperous world. So that's really what the CETA does. We are part of a donor coordination group. I mean, every country, every Western country has its own donor agencies. So some of you may have heard of DANIDA in Denmark or USAID in the States or DFID in the United Kingdom. So most countries in the Western world have an aid agency, and this is Canada. Basically, how do we work? As a development agency, what's critical for us is that we work in partnership. We are not out there in the field actually delivering the aid. So we are terribly reliable on the partners that we work with. And among those partners, and we'll talk a bit more in detail about them, are multilateral organizations, the UN, the banks, various regional development banks. So we're working with multilateral organizations. We're working, and it's an extremely important partner for us, the non-governmental organizations, the NGOs that many of you have heard about, Oxfam Care, Samaritan's Purse, just a whole group of World Vision. So those are NGOs, non-governmental organizations. We're working a lot with academic institutions. And so most universities in Canada do have development assistance programs, mainly in the area of capacity building and in institutional strengthening. We work with other government departments and agencies, both provincial and federal. For example, federally, we work with Agriculture Canada, we work with health, we work with immigration, we work with defense. So, I mean, we're working with other government departments, and they, too, are delivering some components of aid. We work with the private sector, and the private sector is very important to us because we hope that by strengthening the private sector in developing countries, we will help to establish some sustainability, some opportunities for employment, some tax bases for social services. So employment and many of our programs are related to that, including income generation for women, things like that, where we're hoping to support private sector development. We work with other donors. When we talk a bit more in detail about Pakistan, it will become obvious, but we have certainly recognized that one donor alone can't do much. So there's a lot of discussion about donor coordination, where donors, the Danes, the Americans, the Brits, the French, the Germans, whoever, may sit down together to talk about a reasonable approach to a problem, to a development problem. And of course, we work most importantly with the developing countries themselves. Because, of course, all the work that development agencies do is really very minimal compared to the work of the developing country itself. So we work very closely with them. We always, I mean, we're part of a consultative group. We never go in and say, we think we know what's good for you, Pakistan. Here we come. It's not like that. So the developing countries themselves, of course, are our primary partner, and their assessment and their decision as to what they need and what they don't need guides all development programs. And we're working more and more with youth. And youth, because for many reasons, youth are our future. It's obvious. And youth have great potential. And youth are extremely interested. So we see them as an important partner. They're maybe not organized in any way, but we want to provide opportunities for youth so that they can become informed and aware and maybe someday contribute towards development assistance. So our programs, I mean, CETA is a complex agency, and I'm not going to spend too much time discussing how it works, but just very briefly, we have several different ways of working. The major way we work is through what we call geographic programs. So this is really, you've heard the terminology bilateral program, possibly. And what we're saying is the Canadian government sits down with the government of Tanzania and they decide what areas they're going to work in, how they're going to work, what kinds of priorities they're going to have, and then they work together as part of our geographic program. But we also contribute a great deal to the multilateral system. So right now in Pakistan, when you're hearing about the work of the World Health Organization, or the Food and Agricultural Organization, or UNICEF, or many, many others, you can be sure that Canada's contribution is there as part of a global donor contribution to try to make those UN agencies function and maybe give them the resources that they need and that they can do better as a conglomerate than as an individual donor. We work, of course, with Canadian partners. They're critical, as I said, the non-governmental organizations, the universities, the private sector, the professional associations, just a very large group of Canadian partners. And, of course, what we're trying to gear up for is to have policy coherence so that we know where we're going, we're focused, we are working in collaboration with other donors, not duplicating each other. So that's a very important part. And then, of course, we have communications because it's important for us. It's important for Canada and for Canadians to know what it is we're doing with taxpayer dollars. How are we using the money? Is it well spent? Where are there issues? So the communication on the program is very important, and one of the things I hope we will have some questions about today, if you have questions. We believe with all of the problems of the world, and it's hard to read the paper and have sometimes very much optimism, but we still do believe that development has worked and works. When you look at how it works, you really look very globally at very large figures. But, for example, overall per capita income is up in many, many parts of the world and in many countries. There is longer life expectancy in many countries. We believe that millions of children have been spared from dying of preventable diseases through immunization programs, through access to safe water. More and more people have access to safe drinking water. I mean, drinking water has been pretty basic to what we're trying to do. We're seeing a decline in birth rates. We're seeing higher literacy rates. So, I mean, there are some global indicators that could make people feel good, that we've put billions and billions of dollars into development, and we're seeing some results. But we also would be the first as a development agency to admit the challenges remain. I mean, we are not there yet. We know there's very uneven development. Things may be progressing very, very well in Southeast Asia, but very badly in Sub-Saharan Africa. Why is that? We're concerned about governance. If there isn't a strong governance in a country, there's not a good development program. It's just not possible to manage it well. We're very concerned about the increase in HIV/AIDS and in malaria and tuberculosis. I mean, there's serious, deathly diseases that are still very common and in many cases growing. We're concerned about the lack of education. And within that, particularly about the lack of education quite often for girl children. We're concerned about the demographic pressure. We're concerned about gender inequality. We know that there's a very big difference that even now today, again, in Pakistan, it's become an issue. How can we ensure that women and children will have access to the same aid and that they won't be forgotten or neglected? And environmental stresses and pressures on the globe, basically. So these are all things we acknowledge that there are many challenges left. We're trying. We're not there yet. But if you look, for example, at poverty, because CETA is essentially, its goal is to reduce poverty. That's really what, and we want to reduce it through access to health, through access to education, through better safe water, through many, many things. But what we hope it will result in will be less poverty. If you look at poverty in the world today, you can see real progress in some parts of the world. For example, in East Asia and the Pacific, in 1990, they estimated that approximately 29% of people lived on less than a dollar a day. Today, that's less than 1%. So there's been real progress. If you look at South Asia, in 1990, they estimated that close to 43% of people lived on less than a dollar today. Today, it's about 12%. So you see some excellent results. But in Sub-Saharan Africa, which is why CETA is focusing a great deal of its attention on Africa, in 1990, they estimated that approximately 47% of the people were living on less than a dollar a day. Today, it's about 38%. So we haven't seen the progress in Sub-Saharan Africa that we've seen in other parts of the world. And this is, and the figure of a dollar a day, we've been questioned about why a dollar a day, what does a dollar a day really mean? And I can only say that it's a random figure that was selected, but it's something that most of us can relate to. A dollar a day is very, very little money. It won't buy a cup of coffee in Canada. So it's really just an indicator. A dollar has a different meaning in different cultures and in different countries. But definitely, if you're living on less than a dollar a day, you can be sure you're very, very poor. So as part of that, Canada, and as part of the whole donor coordination and the global movement, has bought into what we call the Millennium Development Goals. And some of you maybe have heard about it. The acronym is the MDGs. They talk a lot about the Millennium Development Goals. There was recently a huge meeting in Washington where the leaders of close to 180 different countries met to discuss progress. The Millennium Development Goals were agreed upon in the year 2000. It was millennium. And the goal was that by the year 2015, we would have, as a global effort, eradicated extreme poverty and hunger. We would promote gender equality and empower women. We would improve maternal health. We would ensure environmental sustainability. We would achieve universal primary education. We would reduce child mortality. We would combat HIV/AIDS, malaria, and other diseases. And we would develop a global partnership for development. Have we done it? We're a third of the way through. We're looking at the year 2015, and we know we're a long way. But it's also very interesting to look at the Millennium Development Goals, because we're not a long way all over the world. In some countries, in some parts of the world, you've seen a great improvement in the eradication, for example, of poverty and hunger. And that would be countries in South Asia, in Southeast Asia, in some parts of the Americas. But in Sub-Saharan Africa, regardless of which Millennium Development Goal we had, we are far, far from achieving them. And this is a real concern. Why aren't we achieving them, and what can we do? So when we look at the Millennium Development Goals, some people are confident that we're making partial progress, and we are, and other people get quite depressed because it seems a vast effort has to be made, and we're not sure that we will be able to achieve those goals, and 2015 is coming quickly. So the Millennium Development Goals become very important, and you're going to hear quite a lot about them in any discussion on development. And what makes them important, again, is it's a global commitment. Every country signed on. They said, we are going to do our part, whether they're a poor country or a rich country. Poor countries maybe don't have the funds to contribute, but they've agreed to have policy reduction strategies where they actually have a plan for how they will reduce poverty. They actually make a commitment to governance so the aid will be used effectively, and they actually identify priorities for their own countries. So it is really a global effort. I don't know if any of you have heard or been, followed the international policy statement that was recently released, but that became quite important. In April 2005, the government of Canada released an international policy statement. And it looked at several issues. It looked at diplomacy, it looked at defense, it looked at development, and it looked at commerce. And recognizing that Canada is a trading nation, recognizing the role of defense or the role of diplomacy. So it looked at all four of those aspects. And it changed quite significantly the way we will do aid in the future. And I'm going to talk just a very little bit about it. But in the past, the two major things, I suppose, two major changes were the countries we're working in and our sectoral focus. In terms of countries we worked in, CETA has and will continue to work in over 150 different countries. I mean, we've worked all over the world. Some countries there may be a very, very small program. Other countries it might be very significant and very large. What we have done in terms of countries is we've tried to select countries that we have confidence in, that we have Canadian relationships in, that have governance and can actually have the capacity to use aid, and we have selected 25 countries that are our countries of focus. And those 25 countries are, 14 of them are in Africa. So it's an indication of why, of the importance we're placing on delivering aid to Africa and the amount of effort that's going to be made. Other countries, of course, are in Southeast Asia. Pakistan, as it happens, is one of them. So we're basically promoting aid effectiveness. What we want to do is have better aid. And we're also going to work in specific sectors. We're not going to be all over the map. We're recognizing that Canada has specific areas of expertise and skills, and these include good governance, health, including HIV/AIDS, basic education, private sector development, and environmental sustainability. So those are the areas that Canadian government has said, that's what we're going to do, that's what we're going to work in, our programs will be in those areas. It leaves a lot of other areas equally important possibly that we're not going to do, but this is where you have to keep in mind that donor coordination may mean that while Canada is focusing on primary health, Sweden might be focusing on post-secondary education, and it's that desire to try to be comprehensive that we're all working on. So as I say, the countries, the 25 we selected, were because of their level of poverty. Obviously, we want to work in the least developed countries. Countries that showed that they had the ability to use aid effectively, they could actually use it and wasn't going to be drained away through any number of things, corruption or whatever. And that Canada had a sufficient presence to make a difference. And it was enough so that we could actually measure and make a difference. And we hope that by the year 2010, at least two-thirds of our money that goes to bilateral aid will be going to those 25 countries. It means, though, that some countries that are not part of our countries of focus will not be getting that money, and there's still opportunities, though, for our Canadian partners to work with those countries. So an example might be Sierra Leone. Sierra Leone, as many of you know, is a country that has a tremendous